Alex, tell us. Last time you were on the show, we had a really good discussion about Marvel Snap. I wanted to know.
Oh.
Are you still playing?
Oh.
You know, sadly, I've kind of fell off it, actually.
Hey.
Literally this season, I've kind of like given up with it because...
I know.
I still pick it up from time to time, but do you ever have it in a game where you get really used to like a meta and then they change it like drastically and
constantly
it's like
changing.
It's dead. Yeah. It's dead to me. It's dead. And they've just done that recently with a game where I felt like the meta was in a really good place and then they've just done like a massive overhaul.
Oh man.
Which has like completely changed the game. And like it's also like a never ending grind and there's always gonna be a new season and there's always gonna be a new card. And it's just like I think I've finally burnt out all my dopamine receptors and I'm done with it.
The burnout of 1 year plus being the biggest Marvel Snap fan in the world.
They're gonna miss you, man.
That being said, me and Adam have both found a new love.
Oh, true.
That has like filled us completely.
Oh yeah.
What is this?
Fortnite.
Fortnite, baby.
Fortnite has massively changed my life.
Because I know that the recent like season was just a huge change and update to the game. Was it
massive?
The new canon?
Massive.
Or
our friends have just started playing it because of like the new update, and they just wouldn't stop going on about it. So we're like, oh, we'll just play a few games of Fortnite, see what it's like. We've been addicted every day. It's like our morning routine. Our morning routine is to go downstairs, play duos for a bit, and then like swap solos.
So for a bit of brekkie.
As like, I don't know, like cinephile critic times, we should like absolutely hate like this conglomerate like brand thing. But I love it. It's amazing.
If it eases your pain at all, I'll have you two boys know that me and Jaysha are quite old in the Fortnite sphere.
Oh, really?
Season 2.
Wow.
Back in the day.
Oh,
not even chapter two where you guys are on nowadays. Season 2.
It's funny, really, because we were talking a lot about a lot of games recently. I think the Game Awards were on the other week.
Yeah.
So we've been talking a lot about games that also like guessing when they're announced, like if they're ever actually going to come out or if the idea is just going to be binned.
Yeah.
But we've been discussing a lot recently about like video game history and I've had a lot of interest in like what early video games look like compared to what they are now.
Yeah.
And Fortnite was a recent one that we found, obviously, that we got into, but realized how drastically different it was from its concept stage to the first part of the game. I mean, it's crazy how much that game changed, but was also so versatile and that the people developing it were so open to it being something completely other than what they intended it to be.
It's crazy.
And that kind
of
saved the game, really.
Yeah, because I think I was even playing before season 2. I think when I started it up, the home screen said like main game coming soon.
That's right. I remember that.
Zombie horde survival coming soon. And then like you can try out the multiplayer beta right now. And then it just became the whole multiplayer beta. I need to jump back in. I've been very tempted with like the Michael Myers skin and the Indiana Jones
Peter
skin.
Griffin.
Certain things. Peter Griffin Peter coming Griffin to the skin. Game.
That's a massive game changer for me personally. Yeah, yeah.
Grinding for that right now.
Because I still jump onto Fall Guys when a new costume comes out and need to try just jump in to grab it or unlock it. Same with a few random games. So maybe it's time. Maybe it's time to jump into Fortnite.
100%, man.
Never thought I'd say it.
Say what you will about Fortnite as well, but it is genuinely quite a fun game because it's quite easy as well.
It is.
We've been talking about how, because it's like free to play and any kid with an Xbox can just download it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The lobbies aren't too intense. Like you can, it's pretty easy to get some victory royals going. So that's always like quite nice.
That's a downfall because like it's hugely fun and like accessible game, but the climate around it has just been so bagged on ever since its debut. And what it was like, I'm looking 2017 it came out, and I feel like across the whole like past 5 or 6 years, it's just been known as the game that the kids play.
Absolutely.
Well, I used to be working on like an IT help desk, and the amount of times like people in my company would bring their kids into work, and they'd bring a Switch or bring a laptop, and
it's crazy.
I'd be logging them into our internet and getting them into Fortnite back in the day.
Well, I mean, the whole art style revolves it around it being quite kid-friendly and whatever, and the game's really easy to play. But it's also how it's kind of tried to bring a whole new audience to it with like the different gamers. Like for me, the huge turning point of considering to actually play it was introducing a no build mode.
Yeah.
Because as a granddad now, you know,
it's impossible to do
in terms of video game life. I just can't get my head around it.
Yeah.
I just really, I watch, yeah. I used to work in, I used to work in a place called Game in the UK, which was a video game store.
Yeah.
And they had this thing called Beyond, which is what I worked in, which is where you would come in. They had like a room full of like 30 PCs and consoles, and people would come in and rent by the hour to play them. It's like a community thing. And kids would do like birthday parties there and all that kind of stuff.
Whoa.
Absolute nightmare, by the way. Just complete horror. But I would watch like, you know, these parties happen and they'd all play Fortnite or whatever. And like a kid would just not even be looking at the controller, and it would just be like like 1,000 miles an hour on the controller, like building this huge structure. And I'd just be sat there like, how is that even possible? That's just some like superhuman. There must be some sort of like tutorial around it, but I'm like, I can't kind of work out in my head what they're actually doing on screen, let alone even like attempt to do it. Just a complete nightmare. So like no build, it was like, oh my god, it's like Warzone, which was the one thing that it took over my entire of my lockdown experience. It's become a bit like that, and it's such a good like entry into the game, because the main build or the normal game mode is so intense to like anyone who's just jumped in. It's such a nice gradual build up to, oh, you might want to now try this new game mode, and then you've got like Lego Fortnite and all this stuff, all the different game modes. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. Like they really are like
Rock Band Fortnite.
Yeah. I guess it's becoming what like Roblox is now. I remember that was like a really niche game.
Yeah.
And now I don't even understand the scope of Roblox. I just am aware that it's like, I remember what it was like when I played it at the age of like 12. That's what it is. Yeah. It's unrecognizable to me. I don't even know what happened to my Roblox. But yeah, they've just changed so much they've been so open to change as a video game company. So it's like, this is wicked what they've been managed to do. But yeah, we're just on no build, like smashing it out, getting the victory rails, you know.
No, we got 4 of us here, so that's a full squad.
I know.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Are we doing it?
Good day.
Podzilla and Final Draft teaming up absolutely. On Fortnite. Hey, what skins are you two running?
I haven't got it.
Oh, default.
It's the one thing I won't allow myself to do is fall for the...
That's smart, actually.
It'll happen soon. You mark my words.
It'll ruin me. Every day I log in and I'm like, that battle pass is looking really tasty right now.
By the time the episode is finished.
Yeah, the shop updates every single day.
Yeah.
It's such a genius idea because like it means that there's not like this huge catalogue you can choose from.
It's constant temptation.
You have to buy it then and there.
Yeah.
Before it's gone.
Yeah.
It's such a clever mechanic.
Well, once you unlock the Family Guy skin, you won't need anything else, right?
Yeah, but I need the battle pass to unlock the skin. See, that's where they go. I download the game because I want to play as Peter Griffin.
You got to play for...
It's the rabbit hole. It goes ever further.
You've got to buy the battle pass. Anyway, you've got to like grind out the whole thing as well.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? Oh, Fortnite.
I'm still addicted to this Godzilla mobile game.
Are you still...
playing it strong, 2 years... We regularly talk about it on the podcast.
I'm outraged that they've not reached out for a sponsor.
I know.
Like, what are they doing?
I know.
Just slacking.
We've contacted them. We just, no reply. We're on their no response list.
Mate, it's those just, it's shameful.
Yeah, honestly,
they don't
you.
Deserve your airtime.
It'll happen.
Quite frankly.
That said, Battleline team, if you're listening to this, we absolutely do deserve your airtime. Feel free to, feel free to contact us. Adam is just saying this as a joke. Doesn't mean it.
It's all right. I'd take the Fortnite sponsorship tomorrow.
Yeah.
It means we get like a speed boost towards a Griffin skin. You can now donate in V-Bucks.
I hope we all get big enough that we can be in Fortnite one day. I think that's like,
oh, that'd be sick.
And now the podcasting update.
On the Godzilla drop.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
We've got Lego Fortnite, Rock Band Fortnite. Welcome to podcasting Fortnite.
Oh my god, I guarantee you they're working on it.
Welcome back to Podzilla, everyone. We're getting very close to Christmas, so thank you for tuning into the show. Today, we're going to be talking about Godzilla against Mechagodzilla, continuing our Mechagodzilla journey with the two guys from the final draft, Adam and Alex. Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
So good to have you. This is like, what is this? Our fifth episode?
Sixth, sure.
Yeah, this
we've
is
done more than two.
That's true.
Yeah, we've definitely done more than two. I was laughing though, because even though you guys haven't seen like every Godzilla movie,
what?
In the movies we've watched together,
in
the movies we've watched together, we've had like Rodan, we've had Mothra, we've had Anguirus. You guys have seen like the best of.
Yeah, I don't need to see the other ones. I've seen my best. Exactly.
Yeah, there's been references to like every major monster in the franchise you need to know. You've seen parts of King Ghidorah. You've seen parts of Mothra.
Because every Mechagodzilla movie just has to have like three or four other monsters, right?
It's never just about Mechagodzilla.
Except for this one that we're going to be talking about today. A little bit different, which is going to be cool. I don't know. Should we get right into it?
Let's do it.
Absolutely.
Alex, did you want to take us in?
Of course, always. Several decades after the original Godzilla's destructive rampage, a protege arrives to continue where his brother left off. Akine Yashiro fumbles the dub and gets her squad down trying to battle the new Goji. She is sent to customer service as punishment. Japan's self-defense forces enlist the help of the country's best scientists, including the desperately single Takemitsu Yuhara, to begin work on a robotic weapon that is made with the bones of the original Godzilla. I'm sure that won't cause any issues. 4 years pass by, and Akane has had enough pull-ups and sulking to be brought back into the shooty part of the army and recruited as a pilot in the brand new Q squad. They face Godzilla in battle, but that pesky old Godzilla brain is reactivated during the fight, which causes the mech to go on a rampage. While Mechagodzilla is paired, the gang grow closer and heal old wounds just in time for a final confrontation with Goji. This time Akane is in the driving seat, and despite a close battle, Godzilla is repelled away. Japan is saved for now, and its citizens are most likely furious that their government has been spending their taxpayer money on a robot that half worked.
Amazing. Amazing. Thank you, Alex. This is a big moment for us, boys. We've gone through the Showa era Godzilla when he was created by aliens, I feel,
yes.
In the first couple movies. Random alien stuff.
Monkey aliens.
Monkey aliens, that's right. And then the Heisei era Mechagodzilla, I can't even remember what he was made of. Was it space titanium from Mecha King Ghidorah or something?
From the future.
Yeah.
Space titanium from the future.
Sure.
This one's a bit of, you know, back to basics. I guess it is making a metal monster around the bones of the original Godzilla. But it is just a giant mech piloted by people going up straight against Godzilla, which, you know, a bit basic and a bit, that's kind of what we've been wanting and what we've been talking about. I feel we're always like, Godzilla and Mechagodzilla movies are a bit too all over the place. Mm. So I was pleasantly surprised.
I mean, you add in that he's been possessed by like the old ghost of the 50s Godzilla as well.
Yeah.
But the main thing we get is just a real nice action mecha movie.
How did you guys find it? How did you find Mechagodzilla compared to his previous incarnations?
Very stripped down premise, very like kind of back to basics. I understand this is like sort of another reboot for the kind of Godzilla timeline, right?
Yeah.
Bringing it all the way back to the original. There's a lot of elements that we've seen before, but it's very simplified for this new iteration of Mechagodzilla, who isn't even called Mechagodzilla.
Yeah.
He's kind of Mechagodzilla, but he's his own thing. But I liked it. It's interesting to see one of these films in the new age in the 2000s.
Yeah.
Seeing the new fancy effects and designs and all that sort of stuff, and seeing it in like relatively decent quality, video quality for the first time was nice.
We've had some rough ones.
I think I actually quite liked it overall. I liked that it was kind of a bit more simplistic and straightforward. And this was a very like political take on one of these. It was very like government focused and talking about policies and
taxpayer money,
announcing things over the news, and yeah,
yeah,
yeah, and nuclear weapons and all this sort of stuff. And that was like an interesting angle for it. And I actually quite liked. I think this is the first time I actually have liked the cast. To be honest,
let's go. Yeah,
I actually like the characters in this one, which is nice.
Yeah, the overall quality is like increased dramatically, and it's weird to now have enough films behind us where we kind of get the gist of these films so much quicker, and have some understanding to returning characters as well, and kind of tropes that pass over through the eras. But I think the thing that shocked me most about this was that, you know, I was delightfully hungover and I was feeling very fragile. And the last thing I could do with is a film that like dragged, because I would have fell asleep and it would have been bad. And these films were, especially this one, is so delightfully well-paced. Mm-hmm. You kind of go straight into it and don't muck about. And it really throws you into showing how much the visuals have improved just straight off the bat.
Yeah.
Of kind of doing a big action piece at the beginning, establishing the main characters like quite quickly, and all that kind of stuff that you have to kind of wait for in the other films until at least maybe like halfway through, you kind of get straight away. And you also get some goofs in there as well. Like, I've got my notes that my favorite shot in this is actually, and there were quite a few actually that I really liked, but the emerging shot of the water with the news reporter was just so funny. Like, we were giggling at that.
Yeah.
Well, the pacing was better, but I felt like you also got more definition to the actual integral parts of the story. Like, it was nice to actually understand a bit more about the history of like the monster force,
yeah,
or whatever, or self-defense force, I guess they're called, right?
They've got a long name in this one. I can't remember what it was, but it's like,
yeah, it's really long.
Something. They've got cool hats.
They do. They got the merch.
Yeah.
The merch is so solid. Straight away, Alex and I was like, there's no way they haven't sold this, you know.
I think it's in the Godzilla store. Maybe we need to get them.
So sick.
Yeah, it has to be.
But yeah, I think the main difference was we kind of realized quite quickly that this was a story which focused around Godzilla being more of like the villain, like the kind of moral compass is flipped on this,
yeah,
on this era, which was just so immediately clear. There wasn't any of the debating we've had in the past, like, are we meant to be rooting for him, or like are we meant to hate like the government here? It was so like clear about who the main characters were and where the emotional kind of moral piece was.
Yeah.
And it feels like with every Mechagodzilla film we've done so far, it's now been different. That moral compass has been different for each era about like who Mechagodzilla is and like whether or not they're, it's a good thing, bad thing, and also where you stand with Godzilla and themselves. So it's kind of like, well, this is much more well-rounded, and I love that it just got straight into it. It was fun from the start, which, you know, was a very pleasant surprise for both of us, I think.
Yeah, I feel like we've had some real goofy stuff, right? Because we've had the monkey people, we've had Godzilla like rising from the grave.
Oh God, I forgot about that.
We've had some really goofy stuff. So this one plays, it's like probably the straightest we've watched together so far.
Funnily enough.
And I really appreciate it because I think this was one of the first Godzilla movies I ever watched growing up. So this was kind of the Godzilla I was used to, the like quick, snappy, serious Godzilla. So this journey, the Podzilla journey, has been really fun because I didn't really expect kaiju stuff to be like the movies we've watched. I didn't expect some of the stories to be as drawn out as they are or to be as goofy as they are. And the tone that this one has, I really like it.
Mm.
And I think I'm on the opposite end. I watched Godzilla movies growing up as well, surprisingly. But doing the podcast now, I think I'm a lot more used to that slower paced Godzilla.
Yeah.
So making your way to this one, it's so interesting because like I feel like in the first 15, 20 minutes, you get that first full out brawl between Godzilla and I know he's pronounced Kiyu in the dub.
Yeah. We all watch the English dub, right?
Yeah.
I've always thought he was called Kiryu, but in the dub they're just so confident in saying Kiyu.
Yeah.
K-I-R-Y-U.
But they say Kiyu. They're like marching around with their little chant, the little Kiyu chant. And I'm not sure who to trust. I mean, we've got a great track record of pronouncing names right here on Podzilla.
Of course.
And I'm at a loss. I don't even want to attempt it.
This is a real Ghidorah Ghidorah
situation. It is. Do we say Kiryu or is it Kiryu?
I would have thought Kiryu. That's how I like read
Kiryu.
It. But
Okay, cool.
You guys would know for sure. Like, the dubs are not always the best quality.
Yeah,
that's one way of putting it.
So I would say the dub is not an official source.
Yeah.
I think there's maybe some stretches. There are things about the dub sometimes. The way, you know, a like 6-year-old child sounds like a 30-year-old woman. That's an interesting thing.
Not for sure.
Things like that.
Yeah. There's some loud like background ADR at times. I think
ADR is amazing.
There's a restaurant scene when the two main characters were talking in this one. You can clearly hear someone in the background just saying, "Whoa, this is good chicken. Can you pass the salt?" And it's like just as loud as the main two.
It's horribly mixed.
But that's good. As long as we can trace back you saying it's okay to say Kiryu and it's not on us.
I think that's fine.
Okay, perfect.
I think as the official Mechagodzilla heads, I think that's fine. I think I'll allow it.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect.
We have permission from the top brass. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I just love the way this movie was paced. I love the way it looked. I think this was a huge step up in terms of visuals.
Definitely.
That scene that you mentioned, Adam, when Godzilla appears behind the news reporter at the very start and it's just pouring rain and he's just slowly just like hulking up above him. And then we just get a fight off the back with the maser cannons going up against Godzilla.
The tickle guns, we call them.
The tickle guns.
Yeah, those little, you know, the lasers on the truck?
Yeah.
Yeah, they kept turning up and doing nothing other than giving him like, it was the only, they had tanks, they had like jets like bombing them, and he absorbed all of it. But as soon as that little gun went off, that laser, he was like, ooh, you know, like that's the only thing that kind of affected him, and it just made him like jitter a bit, and then he'd just like throw something at it. It was just useless. Why did they use them all the time? They didn't do anything.
Yeah, they spend so much money on this equipment, and they can very clearly see in battle that it's not doing much other than, just tickling him. Taxpayer money.
What was the line? Was it like, the maser cannons, they'll do the trick, but they lose 70% efficiency in the rain? Like, if they're in the rain?
It's genius, isn't it?
That's why.
The maser cannons?
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. Alex and I had the funniest giggle fit when watching this about the idea of how they pronounced the Mechagodzilla to the world. Because obviously your perspective is from, you know, they kidnap that, well, they don't kidnap him.
First they pretty
all,
much do.
They go up to him. They're like, don't panic. We're the government though. We're going to take you away. And it's very secret and you can't ask any questions, but don't panic. And he's just like, okay, sound. They put him in the car and then they get him in a room that's got like the top scientists and it's like the top secret, really, really secret thing that they have to now work on, and all of them are like, I refuse, or it's not possible. And they're like, well, you're going to do it.
Yeah.
You're going to give it a go. And then the next minute, you've got all of Japan knows about it. It's on the news. Everyone's like, your money.
Yeah.
Taxes are going to triple. They're going up again. I'm sorry, but we're building a big robot, big Godzilla.
We are building the biggest weapon you have ever seen. It's going to be the biggest, baddest. And imagine just being at home and you're just there, like, you can't pay your bills.
Oh,
and you're just like,
struggling to get by.
What are you doing? And you'd be, there's no like government revolt in this, which is what I thought I was missing. Because the first time they got it out for a field test, they didn't even test it. It went out and it went, you know what? I just want to do my own thing. And it started attacking the city. And then it went, oh yeah, by the way, I know you paid for that to happen. All your money has gone towards this thing that just doesn't work, but we're going to keep funding it.
Yeah.
It was just a hiccup, whatever.
All the money that the taxpayers put towards the RGB lighting in his eyes so he could use his reliability.
That was really important.
Yeah.
They had to bling him up.
Imagine to know your life savings were spent on one of the cannons that he jettisoned.
Yeah.
Mental.
I read a really good point on Letterboxd. Someone was saying like, so they can build like the massive like ice laser thing on their own. They can do that. They can build, and they clearly have the ability to build a massive robot that can do, you know, kung fu and stuff. Why does it have to have Godzilla skeleton in it? Why does it need to have the soul of Godzilla in it? Why is that like an essential part?
It's the main scientist. His whole thing is like he created a robotic trilobite, right?
Yeah.
Which doesn't actually have any trilobite in it. It's just got DNA of like a horseshoe crab, and then they put in some robotics. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Very weird.
It's so bizarre.
I did love it though.
No, it has to be powered by the soul of our enemy. It has to.
Yeah.
It won't work otherwise. Yes, it will be. Nothing will go wrong.
Yeah. We were like shouting.
It will be fine. Even if it goes wrong, they're like, it won't happen again.
Yeah, yeah. 100%. You can trust me.
It'll be fine. It's not going to happen again.
Spoiler alert. It's going to happen again.
We'll leave the skeleton in there. We've sorted out the kinks though.
I've changed absolutely nothing about it. It will be fine.
And those, the fact that it was cut. Oh my God. Some of the shots, you're right, were beautiful. So there's that sad Godzilla one at the end where it's got the sun.
Yeah.
And he kind of like leans into the water or just kind of powers down or whatever. And then you've got the end title credit where she stood on the shoulder.
Yes.
And he's like walking away.
Yeah, real cool.
Like some really beautiful shots. And then you have like the really goofy, like he has like, they've put a jetpack on him. Like he can fly and all this stuff. And they decide to carry him via jet.
Yeah.
And then like I can imagine like being like someone in the city looking up and you just see like this, because they put him horizontally, didn't they?
Horizontally,
so it's just this silhouette of like a big Godzilla like coming over you. Just so wild.
They put him up like a parade balloon.
Yeah, they did.
Just going over the city.
I would have loved some shots of like the people looking up and just seeing it blocking the sun or something.
That would have been
great. You know, like on Rogue One where the Death Star like moves in front of it.
Yeah.
And, like, the whole city goes black. That would have been cool.
This needed to take place during Thanksgiving, and there's like a parade down the street, and then they just, a kid like mistakes Mickey Godzilla for a balloon or something.
That'd be amazing.
Genius.
I did feel bad for the normal people during this movie, because you're right, this is very like political, very focused on the defense squad and the prime minister and all the problems that they're dealing with. But the parts we do get of just normal humanity, this is guy just like pleading to be let back into his house before Godzilla steps on it and just destroys it, sends it into chunks. Everyone's having to evacuate the city, then return to the city, then evacuate the city.
Yeah. Just a nightmare.
Life is hell. Yeah, man.
We were saying, just move.
It's not great life. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone get out of Japan.
Just live somewhere else.
At what point do you just have enough of it? I mean, I'd really be fed up.
My house is... I've had 3 houses just blown to bits. I can't do it anymore.
I've just got back on the property ladder.
Yeah. All my rental properties destroyed. Because Mechagodzilla fell in it.
I think my favourite part is you have the Doctor... Dr. Yuhara, and there's like Mechagodzilla's in this movie. Huge, huge complications with his like soul. But then you have this one dude who's just trying his best to win the heart of its pilot.
Yeah.
And he's the most awkward chap.
Oh my God,
in all of history.
I think a lot of it had to do with the translation, didn't it?
Maybe. Probably. It was the translation, but
atrocious.
He's just going up to her being like, hey, do you like children?
No Riz.
Yeah. No Riz is true.
Yeah.
What do you think of children? I did. I don't know if you guys caught the after credit scene.
No.
I never realized it was after credit scene.
No.
But it... like brings that back around, and it's him talking to Akane with Sarah, his daughter, there, and they're like touching base again about the dinner arrangement, and then Akane says, well, we didn't win, we didn't lose, we tied, so that means I'll get you dinner. And then she leaves, and the professor and Sarah just high five each other, and they're like,
oh, not a high five,
we got her.
He didn't go on i5, did he? After all that. Bless him.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you two as well. We've seen, well, as our resident Mechagodzilla experts,
yeah,
you've seen the growth and the change in design across all these decades of these movies.
Yeah.
How do you find the specific design of this Kuryu Mechagodzilla?
I feel like it's a nice balance of what we've had before. It's kind of got a touch of the original design and its kind of clunkiness and articulations and stuff, but it's also got those like sleek qualities from the previous Godzilla. I quite like it, actually. Yeah, I do quite like it, and I liked how they showcased a lot of its abilities this time. I felt like that was an issue with our last visit with Mechagodzilla, that it didn't really do a lot. It didn't kind of utilize all the tools and skills that it has, and this time, maybe sometimes annoyingly, you know it's got that big ice blaster in its chest that it could just use at any time, and it, you know, they don't think to use it.
The absolute zero.
But, you know, yeah, I think the design's really cool, actually. I'm not sure about, like, the jetpack thing, like the blue jetpack. I feel like that makes it a little bit too, like, action figure-y.
Yeah, because Mechagodzilla 2 in the Heisei era, the super smooth guy, he had, like, built-in jetpacks, right? And had all these crazy effects. I did kind of like just how this Kuryu just had to be helicoptered in, like he was just a very clunky, like, robot. It's a cool feel.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was definitely my favorite design for both Godzilla himself, but also Mechagodzilla. Because, like Alex said, it was like we discussed it when we were watching it, like, it was actually a really nice mix of both. You still had those kind of, those eyes that filled a lot of character in its face. You know, you could still tell that he was like angry or sad through his really big like yellow eyes. But you had this new, at least for us, this is new, but the Godzilla had like all the skin was completely different, and you had like the shards on the back that were more defined, and
yeah,
and the way like, it, you know, it was so much better than all of the others. It was definitely my favorite.
Oh, cool.
And Mechagodzilla was, although I appreciate the early designs, I think they look really cool. I'd love to have like a little model of the old ones, but functionally they suck. You know, it had all of these really cool like grooves and bumps over it where like you would think a missile comes out, like with the last one, and it was nothing. You know, it was just a big metal suit. Whereas with this, it's got so much more detail in those places that make it both like functionally better, but also look better as well. Don't know, maybe it's just a personal taste. I prefer like the older kind of more cartoonish ones, but I think that's more nostalgic than it is you know, actual logic. But yeah, I love them. I think they're really neat and very different and just more appropriate, I think, for the story, but not too much in like, oh, this is a full animal. You've still got its like Godzilla's still got his weird expression of eyes, like the last iterations, which I really appreciate.
I love this Godzilla's little thingies. He's always like he's always like twiddling his little fingers.
Yeah, they're always moving. Yeah, because Godzilla's very different, even from this era. This is the first time he's looked the way he does, and I really like his neck. Like, he's got the very pronounced, I don't know, his like sinewy almost neck,
like neck tendons
you can see. Yeah, and I love the scene. Yeah, I feel like we've got it in another Mechagodzilla movie as well, but when he is set against lightning and you just see his spines, the scutes on his back just lighting up as lightning's striking.
Yeah,
some really cool visuals. I really liked it. He's just more of like gray colored too. Yeah,
and his atomic breath this time as well. He does this nice thing where he like he lets it fester in the back of his throat and charges up.
Yeah,
This guy's had some five gum. I feel like out of all the Godzilla so far, this one's breath would be like the best feeling,
the best smell
to be burnt by.
Wow,
that's a take.
Yeah, that is a take. Yeah,
I would love to be blasted by this Godzilla.
This Godzilla?
Okay. No, I think it does help because like for both Mechagodzilla and Godzilla, the last time we've seen these two face off is back in the Heisei era in the 90s where, you know, special effects were just starting to become a bit more of a mainstream thing in movies. And even then, I don't think there were much at all in that movie. They used practical effects much, much more.
Yeah.
But I think this is like the perfect time for this movie where you have the advent of CGI, and I feel like that's what Mechagodzilla is all about. It's not just hand-to-hand combat. It's about all these fun abilities that you can have a robot do. You have his little like cannons on his back. You have his absolute zero cannon from his chest. You can just show off these two in such a better light than you ever have before. My favorite scene of this movie is when Kiryu comes in. I still don't know whether to say Kiryu or not. comes in for a second fight, just silhouetted against
the moon. The moon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Such an epic shot.
And he just slides to the city and he like shoulder checks Godzilla, just like sends him flying. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I think this is such a cool idea. Like, this is the perfect Mechagodzilla backstory, I think. I love the whole thing about using the OG Godzilla's bones to create this new monster. And I quite like the like PTSD flashbacks that the OG Godzilla's getting. Like, he remembers Hiroshima, he remembers the first Godzilla movie, and then he starts wanting to fight back against humanity and return to his destructive ways. I think it's pretty clever. Mm. It's a lot cooler than some of the other stuff.
I can agree more on that. It's so, that's what's so like unique about this.
Yeah.
Those small little details make it more just more plausible for an audience, not in terms of logic, but like, it just gives you something to like root and dig your teeth into. I find that just, yeah, so much more charming as well. You kind of really get soaked into this a lot better with those little details. And it just made sense. Obviously, we've kind of like listed so many things that don't make sense. But this is definitely like, oh, I can understand like the reason they're doing all of this and the choices that they're making. It makes sense and it actually aids the story, which is, you know, quite rare.
There's a good raising of the stakes with the whole, oh, we've lost connection, we need someone to like automatically pilot, so then Yagena's come in and she's actually in the mech, which I feel like is what we wanted from the beginning.
Yeah, I know.
The films, right. So we were very happy to see that. and it brings all of the threads together in a nice way. All of like the different narratives that they've got going on with all characters for that final confrontation. Because I think sometimes if it was like the confrontation just between the kaiju and the humans just on the sidelines.
Mm.
And everyone felt really nicely involved in this, which was nice.
I think it is a little jarring having that aspect of Mechagodzilla like remembering his own 54 self and having that PTSD in the first half of the movie. And then it's all resolved and it doesn't come back for the rest of the movie.
But it could be teasing something for the next movie. You never know.
It could be teasing something for the next movie. But
I think you're right, though. It could have been flipped in terms of how the battles turned out. You could have had him do really well the first time and almost kill Godzilla. And then he just get away, or, you know, what happened last time. And everyone's, you start to settle them back into like, this is a huge success. And then he comes back. And that's where he turns the second time round. You know, they think they trust him now, send him out, and it fails on them. And that's how the movie ends, is like, oh no, we've basically now got two of them. What are we going to do?
That would have been good.
I think it would make sense for like a more natural finish, because what is it that happened? Oh, I have a great message here. We watched it in the Podzilla watch party on our Discord, and my laptop just ran out of battery. But in the final fight, like, yeah, you have Godzilla fighting Mechagodzilla. Mechagodzilla flies him over to the water, uses his absolute zero cannon on him.
The smashed ice. I think that was
smashed ice.
That's the nickname for it, yeah. Smashed ice.
And then Godzilla just kind of gets up and just walks away, which isn't, I don't know, a lot of people say it's not very Godzilla-like. We had G Kira in the Discord say, can't wait for the press conference where the government says that they have to spend Japan's entire GDP again to repair the robot, even though no damage was mitigated.
It's a hard sell, isn't it?
Because he's just going to come straight back afterwards.
Yeah.
That's a hard sell.
We were laughing because at the end, like, Godzilla goes away and there's like very heroic shot of her like looking as Godzilla goes away, and you cut back to like everyone in like the war room, like, woo, yeah, we did it. And it's like, why are you clapping? This is like
the biggest
failure. Like, this is absolutely the worst thing that could have happened. Like, he's still alive.
We did it right.
And he's still flattened half of Tokyo. Like, what?
Yeah. The Prime Minister saying, like, it isn't a success, but we've driven him away. We've never done that before. When in reality, all Godzilla really ever does is do a little bit of destruction, then go back to the water anyway. So it's kind of like you just elongated the fight.
David off.
I can totally picture in that war room, like, he's like just sweating in his chair, like, I'm going to lose my job. You know, like, I think, do you know what? I think that's a success. Like, everyone's like, right? And he's like, well, you know, he's scared. He ain't coming back. Yeah, we've done it. And everyone like clapping, and like his advisors behind him just like clapping and then going, do you think he looks tired? You know, like behind him. Like, I think he's going to go. Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, let's get him out.
And the financer in the back just losing their mind at how they're going to pay this off. The whole finance team.
Yeah, just
shambles.
Pure denial, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was ridiculous. Because you have that shot as well of Kiryu charging up his freezy chest beam. And then what? Godzilla uses his breath against him and it just like freezes three huge buildings. And everyone's just like, whoa!
He's now
that's
on 20%.
More million dollars. 20%. Well, did you guys have a favorite monster? Because we have a few. We have Godzilla. We have Kiryu, which I guess is the first Godzilla as well as Mechagodzilla. We have the Mecha Trilobite.
True.
I thought you guys would really like from the start there. We also get Mothra and Gaira in stock footage during the start of this movie. We get some flashbacks to previous films. It's cool to see. I think Kiryu was my favorite. I think this is my officially like my favorite Mecha Godzilla.
Not the Mecha Trilobite?
But Mecha Trilobite, yeah, it's up there, nearly.
Well, my favorite monster was, it's probably the hamster, the noise from the daughter. That was probably... I love that they talk about, I think we've spoken about this before, they're like, oh, aren't hamsters such great pets for kids? No, they're not.
There's been hamsters in previous movies.
It's like the worst pet you could ever get. Those things are evil.
They don't care, do they?
I did hear that this movie came out at the same time that Hamtaro was very big in Japan. I think there was a double bill with this movie, or there was like a sponsorship going on. So,
yeah, that hamster.
Yeah, they have to promote hamsters, you know?
I feel like we're talking about the wrong movie.
I think it's both of them.
Oh, sweet.
No, there's definitely a hamster in this one, right?
He buys a hamster as like bro. So that show come move in with him.
Yes. Yes, no, you're right.
That is this movie.
Yeah, I like Kiryu in this. I think this is my... It's like essentially the same design as the next movie here, but these two Mechagodzillas are like far and above my favorite designs we've had. And I think just the backstory of him being made from the skeletal remains of that first Godzilla is just like, give a bonus check to whoever came up with that in the writing room. That's a genius idea to further those links between this and the original movie and bring in some extra themes for it. And I think just having this one and that backstory, it makes for a more accessible viewing for people who are newer to the franchise as well. Because you watch this movie, everything's pretty much summed up from the get-go.
Yeah, there's flashbacks, but they explain them well enough.
You explain them well enough.
I would have liked to have learned more about the little digi thing in the crate. I thought it was going to like do like a callback to it. Like, oh, there is a flaw with it though. Wink.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, if you send electricity for it, the mechanism fails and it will, you know. But we're trying to fix that and use it as like a plot, but I was just asking too much. And they breeze past that.
The Trilobite gets flashbacks to the prehistoric period when it was...
Where am I?
You wrecked by a dinosaur.
Realizing it's in captivity, just goes crazy. Poor thing.
Who was your stand-up monster, Adam? Kiryu? Godzilla?
Yeah, I just like the new Godzilla. It was like a real surprise seeing how the design changed so much. And the new Mecha Godzilla was really cool, like all the features and stuff on him. I'm glad that they got rid of kind of the goofier sides of it. You know, they still have their like bits of humor in it that work quite nice. But you also now have a score that reflects, I think that was a big dramatic change that we haven't spoke about yet. The score now reflects a bit more of a moodier, deeper or darker tone to match the action scenes that actually enhanced it rather than like took you out of like what was going on. Like you'd have this really dramatic moment where everyone's like looking up to the sky like, like, you know, we're all going to die. And then it'd just go to this like royal like rumble and March, you just be like, yeah, oh yeah, let's go. You know, and it really took like the scariness or the tension out of Mechagodzilla. And it worked for that, you know, they're goofy. But for this, it's like, okay, well, the score feels a bit more appropriate to what's being showcased now. So by far, I don't know what lies ahead for the future of what you plan to show us, but so far, this is absolutely my favorite design of both Mecha and normal Godzilla.
Cool.
So yeah, very pleasant surprise. And the callbacks, the flashbacks were actually quite cool. Yeah. Mostly because obviously we knew what that was for the first time. Like there's been callbacks in other movies where we're like, I don't know what that is. They'll tell us, Alex, don't worry. They will tell us. And we're like, oh, we're actually like pointing at the screen now. You're like, oh, that's that. Like, oh, yeah.
So you two both knew who Bigfoot Gyra was.
I was just going to say, hang on a minute. Did you watch the Bigfoot one? Because I was like, of all the iconic, kaiju you could have had. What is that?
Read Bigfoot.
Yeah. Yeah, you could have put some different ones in there, can you?
Well, guys, I thought we could play a game. Speaking of iconic kaiju, I've prepared a little something.
Uh-oh.
That I thought we could play, a little competition of sorts.
Oh, no.
And I'm calling it Doctor Who or Doctor Who. And I'm realizing that that name sounds a lot worse said out loud than written down, but Doctor Who is in, spelt out D-O-C-T-O-R. Doctor Who is in the TV show.
Of course.
Made famous in UK. And then D-R dot Who. Doctor Who, the famous character from the Godzilla-adjacent movie King Kong Escapes.
Of course.
So I thought we could play a little game. Yeah. I thought we could play a game. I'm going to say the names of six different monsters or aliens or creatures or people. And you guys have to tell me if it's like a Doctor Who-related thing or if it's a Godzilla-related thing.
Okay.
I think even like you could play this too, Micah, because you know a lot about Godzilla. I think these two know a bit more about Doctor Who than you do. Okay. But let's do a competition.
Let's do it.
Adam versus Alex versus Micah, Doctor Who or Godzilla. Number one, I want you guys to tell me if Blowfish is something from Doctor Who or something from Godzilla. Blowfish.
I think it's Godzilla.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Godzilla.
I feel like it's Doctor Who simply for the fact that I can't remember a Blowfish.
Hey.
Don't do this to me.
Godzilla's got like giant octopuses and everything.
Tell you what, let's go majority Godzilla, and then I'll still feel accomplished.
Hey, this is a competition.
Is this the official lore accurate name as well?
Blowfish, yeah, it's official.
Blowfish, okay.
Blowfish.
Yeah, has to be Godzilla then, because Doctor Who always has silly names.
We got two Godzillas, Micah. What are you saying?
I'll say Doctor Who.
The answer is Doctor Who.
What?
Blowfish is an alien humanoid that kind of looks like a blowfish. And the blowfish, guys, was present at Stonehenge when the 11th Doctor was imprisoned in the Pandorica.
Hey?
Iconic moment. Everyone's in utter disbelief right now. This is going to be a hard game.
Oh, this guy.
Oh, I remember this dude.
This dude.
This old...
Oh, no.
You're joking.
Okay.
Was he in Torchwood?
He's in Torchwood.
He's in Torchwood too. Yeah.
He's in Torchwood.
You can get a natural figure of him.
It was an opening scene, wasn't it? Where they were like chasing a hot rod car and it was the Blowfish.
There you go.
Oh, for goodness sake.
I'm going Godzilla and Godzilla adjacent. I'm also going Doctor Who and Doctor Who adjacent, just so you guys know.
Why was he in that episode?
Wow. Okay, so Micah's on 1 point. Adam and Alex on zero right now.
We suck.
Second name, Grosk. G-R-O-S-K-E, Grosk.
This one means nothing to me.
Oh, I think I do know. I think this is Doctor Who because Sarah Jane Adventures had the main villain. What was his name? The big guy in the hood. What was his name?
I've not seen the Sarah Jane Adventures.
Oh, you're missing out.
I can't remember what it is. I know you're on about. I can't remember what it is.
Yeah. He had a little gremlin that used to walk next to him.
Was that called Grosk?
And I thought he was called a Grosk or something
I think you're right, actually. Yeah,
I'm happy to jump on that.
I'm with Adam.
I don't know. I don't know whether or not it's the way you pronounce it that just doesn't tick in my head or like... Yeah, I think it is. Because it also featured...
Can you pronounce it a bit better?
The Grosk? The Grosk? The Groske?
Well, I think it also featured in like a really weird, like, I remember playing a browser game of Doctor Who where like he had to like...
Yeah, they made like a special episode.
I don't know, that he'd like dismorphed as one, or... It was a trickster, wasn't it?
They made like a special episode with this little guy. And I think that is who,
yeah,
who it is.
Everyone's saying Doctor Who across the board?
Yeah.
The Grosk?
Oh, God. I can't get this wrong again.
No, you're all correct. Yeah, Doctor Who. It's a small blue little humanoid guy from the Sarah Jane Adventures.
There you go.
In the episode Death of the Doctor. Adam, you're spot on. I'm amazed right now.
Knew the backstory as well.
Come on.
Remembering the Grosk, the scenes he was in?
I feel fulfilled in life now. That time watching it not back to back as a child has actually, at some point in my life, been useful in a competition. Or
now it's finally useful.
I can't believe it.
Okay, we've got a few more here. The next name, Madalan. M-A-D-A-L-A-N. Madalan.
Madalan.
Or Madalan.
Not the famous clothing store in England, Madalan.
No. No, not Madalan. Madalan or Madalan?
This could go either way. It sounds familiar. I think that's the only reason I'd go for Godzilla.
I don't think I've ever heard it in Doctor Who.
Okay.
Mm. But I think it could easily be Doctor Who.
Madalan.
I feel like Godzilla just because it sounds more like a kaiju type
name. Sounds like
a
monster name.
Kaiju name? Yeah.
No, 100%. I can't think of anything in Doctor Who that was, well, clearly it's going to be... My knowledge is going to be questioned here, but no, I can't. I really, really can't think of, unless it was like a character. But we're talking about monsters, aren't we? Creatures.
Anything, man. Characters, monsters, aliens. It could be anything at all. Madalan.
No, I think it is Godzilla. I can't recall anything.
Three Godzillas?
Yeah. Three Godzillas.
All right. The Madalan is from Godzilla.
Cool.
Or Godzilla adjacent. It's a Kappa-like monster that shows up in Go God Man. A TV show that we watched for the show. The Madalan.
I know this one. I looked at a picture of him yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah.
Hey.
Because I think there was a short Go God Man directed by the same director as this movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's Godzilla.
Nice job, chaps.
We got another one. Maneater. There's something from Doctor Who or Godzilla.
Maneater. I don't think Doctor Who's ever been that on the nose with people that eat men.
Hey, they had blowfish, you know?
Oh, that's true, yeah. Hang on a second. Yeah, you might be right.
I'm quite annoyed about Blowfish thinking about it because he doesn't really look like a Blowfish either. He kind of...
No, he doesn't. Yeah, it's kind of annoying, isn't it?
That's more like a cuttlefish.
Yeah.
Can I just say as well, the Grosk looks disgusting.
The Grosk? The blue Grosk?
The Grosk
guy?
Just looks disgusting. Creepy.
Yeah.
Maneater.
Maneater.
I feel like that's some sort of like animal though. Like... Some sort of like creature from the sea or like a shark. Mm-hmm. So I'm edging more towards Godzilla.
I think it might be a Doctor Who thing. I feel like Doctor Who has some pretty silly names. Pretty straightforward. I feel like it could be. Mm-hmm.
I think if Doctor Who hasn't used the name Maneater right now, by now I think I'd be disappointed for some reason. So I think I'll go Doctor Who.
Two Doctor Whos. What are you saying, Adam?
I'm going to have to stick with my gut and just be like...
Godzilla?
Godzilla, I think, yeah. Some sort of shark thing.
This is Godzilla. Maneater is a humanoid plant kaiju that appears in All Monsters Attack and grabs little Ichiro, a little boy, when he's on the island.
I do remember this.
Like a Venus flytrap kind of thing.
Kind of, looks like a human in a plant suit. But yeah, the Maneater.
I remember this.
Sounds fantastic.
Okay, we got two more. Next name, the Varga plant. V-A-R-G-A plant.
Can I just say these are terrific, by the way, because I feel like I am...
You've really gone to the depths.
I think I knew Doctor Who.
Second guessing everything you hold dear.
Yeah, no, you've done so well. Because these questions are very hard and they weirdly kind of like intertwine, like you would guess that they both are involved with Doctor Who and things. I'm just going based on knowledge of stuff that I've seen and heard, and
the Varga plant.
Varga plant.
I want to go Doctor Who because if Godzilla has more than one plant,
hey,
plant monster.
Varga plant.
Biollante. That's another plant monster from Godzilla.
The mushroom people as well.
Mushroom people.
I'll go Doctor Who.
I'll go Doctor as well. That sounds like a Doctor Who-y name. Fuck, plan.
Sounds a sort of like planetary
healing
thing or... Yeah, sure. I'll go with Doctor Who.
Vargaplant is from Doctor Who. It's a large, free-moving cacti from the first Doctor adventure called Mission to the Unknown, the Vargaplant.
Wow.
Cactus.
Not something I've heard of. I haven't delved too much into Classic Who, which is a bit of a sin for me, really.
Hey.
Bit of a sin.
We got one more. I don't know who's winning. You're all doing pretty well. Number six.
Someone will tell us.
Last one. Kylak or Kylak. Kylak? Kylak?
Oh, gosh. Kylak. No, I think that's... Usually with like really obscure names on Doctor Who, you remember them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're often like pronounced by doctors like quite well. I don't think this is Doctor Who. Oh, but now I'm second guessing myself. Damn, I'm really not sure.
Yeah, this is hard.
I feel like it's ringing a bell.
Yeah, like I haven't watched Doctor Who in a little while, and this sounds like something I've heard of recently. But it could so easily fall into both categories.
I feel like I'm going to go Doctor Who. I'm going to just stick with Old Reliable and go with Doctor Who. It literally could be either.
Yeah, why not? Okay, cool. Well, let's do that then. I'll go with you, Alex, and I'll say Doctor Who as well.
I'll go Godzilla just because it sounds recent.
The Kylax are from Godzilla. They're a race of all-female aliens that appear and destroy all monsters. Nice job, guys. That was this installment of Doctor Who or Doctor Who.
I love this show.
Installment.
I love this.
This installment.
Just do this.
It might return. It may return. Who knows? Adam, I'm amazed at your Doctor Who knowledge, to be honest. Remembering a scene from Sarah Jane Adventures and Torchwood? That's some...
From a single name?
I was halfway through it, and I was like, if this is wrong, I'm going to look like the biggest idiot and can't call myself Doctor Who fan. So,
no, you've got the title.
I guess it's just because that era with the Sarah Jane Adventures and Torchwood was just so... So like integrated into my childhood, I feel like I know pretty much all of it. But as soon as you start delving into like Matt Smith and like later, it starts to get a bit
foggy. First Doctor stuff.
Oh yeah, all really, really old stuff. So I won't claim to be like the Doctor Who man, but I'm glad. I'm so happy that I got that one, and I'll take that.
Proud of you guys. I'm proud of you guys.
Not Thank the you, Doctor man. Who man, but you're a Doctor Who man.
That works for me. I'll take that.
Well, to bring us back into the movie, I think there's one like big point we haven't talked about, and that's really the human characters, because we've talked about how they are quite compelling this time around. Akane and Uhura, and then Uhura's daughter, Sarah. There was quite an interesting little subplot flowing through the movie, or a quite serious one, when Sarah is got this like heightened sense of... she's real sensitive to life and death, and her mom passed away when her mom was giving birth to a sister or a brother of hers. The baby didn't live, and then she's carrying around this plant that's sensitive to touch, and there's also it's kind of inferring a little bit that like a little bit of her mom's in that plant that she's carrying around.
It's really not something that connected with me much in the story. Which sounds awful to say, but like I wasn't interested in it. I think I was so engaged with all of the other interesting things that they'd added in, and it almost acted like a bit of a shock, and just processing all of that. It made me, you know, I think we got halfway through the movie and I just went, "Who, Alex, why does this girl keep turning up with a plant? like I don't understand why we keep cutting back to her, because she's saying nothing. I feel really bad for like the actress, because obviously had no direction at all, but she always just pulled the same face of just like she's not very happy with this. But there was nothing else really that I felt that she was given during like those points of the movie. Like she wasn't allowed to go into a different scenario and like do stuff. She just sat in the corner just like sulking.
Or reaction shots from her. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I guess it kind of like threw me out trying to think too much about what her involvement was in the plot, and it summed it up in a nice way. Especially towards like the first half of the movie, I was just like, Unsure what we're doing here. you know?
Yep.
But yeah, maybe it was just like, it's just not something that caught me whilst watching it.
I like the attempts at like kind of trying to create this kind of running theme of about, I don't know, grief or life anew and all this sort of thing, that being kind of reflected in Mechagodzilla, being the Godzilla of the past, being kind of brought back. And yeah, that kind of backstory about the mum passing away and Nakane's kind of guilt over getting all of her squad mates killed. And
reversing them off a cliff.
Yeah, which is, you know, kind of an L, but...
it is what it is.
It is what it is. And yeah, I liked it. There was that kind of repetition of that kind of idea about the past and grief and how that kind of all related for all the characters and that being kind of shown through Mechagodzilla. I thought that was like a nice little touch. And again, like, I appreciated that this film gave the characters arcs, you know, like Kane kind of like gets over that like chip on her shoulder and learns to like be a team player again and all that sort of stuff. And that's like the kind of thing that we aren't used to seeing very much in these films, I think, where you have like a really like solid arc like that. And even if it is very simple and bare bones and maybe characterization isn't always like on point, they still like give them the time. And yeah, it feels like a lot of the film is spent with the characters enough, you know, like sometimes it's too much, other times it's too little. This felt like the perfect kind of balance of, you know, of being with them and where their headspaces are at and why they are in the story as well, like why they contribute something. I mean, with like the girl, little girl, like her kind of feeling the presence of Godzilla within was like a nice little thing. It was like it's quite a sweet little idea that she can like feel its pain and it doesn't want to fight. And that was like quite an interesting take, I suppose, on the destructive nature of Godzilla, and maybe makes you question nature of this new Godzilla. Maybe it's not this kind of mean thing, it's just this kind of force of nature, which is like a great characterization for Godzilla, I think, that it's like not a malicious creature. Although this Godzilla is pretty mean. He looks pretty nasty. But yeah, the idea that it's just acting on impulse and it just has this innate desire within it. I don't know, there's something kind of interesting about that, I think.
Yeah, Sarah's like an anomaly for me in this film. I think they were trying to do some mirroring there with, you know, seeing the soul of that original Godzilla now shown in this Mechagodzilla, and then maybe the soul of her mother in this plant. I feel like it just didn't really result in anything, though.
No.
Like, she carries a plant around literally her entire life, it seems like, and you don't really see much else apart from that. I know that these movies tend to have, like, another human subplot on top of the story. In Mechagodzilla 2 in the Heisei era, we had the subplot of, I don't know if it was Baby Godzilla or Little Godzilla.
I think it was Baby. Yeah.
Baby Godzilla, and then Miki in that movie trying to use her telepathic power. There's a lot of like one-off girl characters with powers in these movies.
A lot of spiritual psychic stuff.
Psychic powers.
Godzilla, yeah.
But what I liked about that in that movie is that it ended up kind of merging with the main Godzilla line in a really nice and almost natural way. How you have Baby Godzilla returning with his dad and both going off together, but it just didn't really result in anything in this movie. So I'm really confused as why they ended up choosing what they did. Because we've had aspects in Biollante before in the Heisei era where you have stories about people's souls being trapped in plants. So it kind of just feels like a repeat of a few different ideas they've tried to throw around before.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it quite connected with me either, but I did really appreciate it because that's something I think the Mechagodzilla movies actually do really well, because I remember back to Terror of Mechagodzilla when it had a human plotline mirroring the whole Mechagodzilla thing back then as well, when I can't remember her name, but there was an actual robot girl.
The cyborg lady.
That was dealing with some of the, like, am I human, am I not? And that was kind of mirroring Mechagodzilla. I did appreciate Sierra. I really liked the letting go of the plant at the end. Like, she let go of that and learned to deal with all that trauma. It was just really a bit weird to have this little girl sitting next to Akane, the pilot. And Akane's just like, man, I'm the absolute worst. I hate my life. No one likes me. I'm completely worthless. Little girl, what do you think? It's like just numerous scenes of her just like trauma dumping on this little girl throughout the movie. But I appreciated it. They'll try to do something different. Well, Micah, do we have any trivia for Godzilla against Mechagodzilla? And then we can go into some final thoughts and bring it home.
Yeah, we had a few little bits of trivia here.
I've even got a little fact myself that I just found out.
Oh my goodness.
Like waiting.
Let's start with that.
No, give it to me.
Oh, okay. Well, you guys are going to have to reaffirm this for me because I kind of figured this out from initially seeing it, but then having it like backed up in the comments. But I wanted to just, because we watched them back to back, I just wanted a little refresh on the little key plot details. So I thought I'd watch the trailer.
Yeah.
And maybe I'd get some like shots I could refer back to and stuff like that. So I watched the trailer and I was like, oh, they're doing a lot of flashbacks here. And this, by the way, this is on the Sony's official YouTube channel page. This has been put on. And I was watching it, I was going, the title's right, 2003, Against Godzilla, yeah. I was watching it. And it was just a lot of flashbacks of like the Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla 2 that we watched with the baby Godzilla.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, they don't have this many flashbacks in the movie. What are they talking about? And then I realized that the whole trailer is just for that movie.
Yeah.
But they've written it as the title for the one that we're talking about now. And everyone in the comments is just like, this is mental. This is how little they actually care about these films because they've got the trailer for Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2.
Yeah.
And then then wrote Godzilla against Mechagodzilla on it. 2003, and I've got like the right cast and everything in the description. I'm like, this is wild. This is how's this not crazy, been picked up?
Yeah, I noticed the exact same thing yesterday because I went back to look at the trailer to grab some clips from the movie.
Yeah.
And I was taken aback because there's a thumbnail for Godzilla against Mechagodzilla, and it's
by the official Toho page as well.
Yeah, baby Godzilla's there, then it's just a trailer from Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla 2. And apparently on the Sony like DVD release of this movie, that the actual trailer included on the DVD is Godzilla against Mechagodzilla 2. Like they've really just mixed them up, which is kind of stupid. And I know that the Sony releases people have been a bit annoyed with because all of Godzilla isn't really owned by, like the distribution rights aren't owned by a single company. Sony's still got some of the rights and other places do, and it's a little bit all over the place, but that was so weird.
I was going to say as well, even the title feels like kind of like a weird like mistranslation almost. It's like they were trying to find any other word that wasn't versus, and they were like, against?
I think it's supposed to be, in the Japanese, it's supposed to be Godzilla X Mechagodzilla.
Right.
But it is so funny seeing all these movies and seeing them try to use like every variation of, versus.
Add a two on the end. Yeah.
Change it to an X. That's a good little, I'm adding that to my little repertoire. Yeah, on YouTube you can see the Toho and Sony page for trailers of this movie completely wrong, which is so funny to see. Some real quick ones. The English tagline, Jaysha roasted me for not knowing some taglines for previous Godzilla movies, so I just chuck this out here. The English tagline for this movie is fight till crumbled.
Love it. Because Mechagodzilla crumbles the buildings using ice, right?
Oh, okay.
Suppose so.
Sure, yeah. That's what I got from that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
That's going to be my slogan whenever I make some apple crumble next. We have, I don't know if it's pronounced Kiryu or Kiyu in the actual Japanese, but it's a proper translation that means literally machine dragon or mechanized dragon, which makes so much more sense in the movie, because instead of explicitly calling him Mechagodzilla, he has a bit more of a thematic name as like the Mecha Dragon.
Yeah.
Which is so cool. You guys might have noticed a scene in the movie where there was a few references to baseball in this film, but there was one where it was on a baseball pitch and you see this baseball star just hit a home run out of the park.
Sorry, yeah, we spoke about that. Yeah, we referenced it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this was actually a proper famous Japanese baseball player called Hideki Matsui. And he was in the movie because his nickname was Godzilla.
That's so cool.
On the baseball pitch.
That's why they brought him in. He's like, let's get this Godzilla guy onto the team. He was playing for Nippon Professional Baseball, but 6 days after this movie was released, he moved on to play for the New York Yankees.
Hey.
And I'm sure we're all the biggest baseball fans in the world. So.
Yeah.
Famous British sport.
Yeah, famous New Zealand sport too.
Is there even... I don't even know if there's a New Zealand baseball team.
I don't know if there is.
Is there a UK baseball team?
No.
I feel like everybody outside of America just looks at it and is like, oh, what's baseball, this weird sport cool. You're playing with a bat?
What is that?
You guys remember Titanosaurus from Terror of Mechagodzilla? He was like the red dragon dinosaur looking creature.
Yeah.
He could wag his tail real fast and blow big ones, but he was meant to represent like actual nature. And
you could Alex
blows big wins. He was meant to represent like actual nature in that movie.
That's right.
He was the one creature who didn't like explicitly do anything evil, I believe. He might have been controlled. But he was originally going to appear in this movie once again as a proper hero this time, helping out Mechagodzilla. But he was cut late into the production of this movie. But you can see his name on a fish tank in one scene in this movie at a festival.
Hey. You must have been a big fish tank.
I love little things like that.
Once again in this movie, we have the director show up in a cameo in the final post-credit scene.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
He does these for a few of these movies, and he literally just shows up. You don't see his face. He's just a dude walking past the camera.
Masaki Tezuka. Yeah.
There are some links to other movies in the Godzilla lore, but I'm going to save that for next episode because it's a lot more apparent there. But the last little bit was that this movie, I know this is always thought about as like the Kiryu saga. This and Tokyo SOS, the next movie we're going to be covering, are very, very linked and intertwined in nature. But they weren't actually intended to be sequels to each other. This was supposed to be a standalone film, which makes the subplot of, you know, the 54 Godzilla possessing the suit, possessing the mech, so much more confusing to me. Because if that was the case, it was intended to be, you know, an aspect that shows up in the middle of the movie and then was forgotten about for the entire end. But after the production of this movie had been completed, Masaki Tezuka was approached by one of the producers to make yet another film. And he was real reluctant to do so. He didn't want to repeat the same story beats. So they gave him 4 options of stories on what to do. They said, hey, pick a card, any card.
Awesome. That's so cool.
And he was like, I hate all of these cards. He went home that day. He wrote a story draft, an outline of this movie, presented it to them the next day. And they were like, yeah, this is better than what we read. And that's the story of Tokyo SOS, which we will be covering
next episode. Yeah.
It's good stuff. That'll be me for trivia. Just a few little tidbits there.
Nice. Should we go into some final thoughts and a rating if you wanted to kick us off, Alex?
Sure. Yeah, this was like a nice little re-entry into this world for us. I like that this was a very like tight, you hit us up, you sort us out with a tight 90 boys, which I really appreciate. But no, I really liked it. Like new whatever we're calling it, new Mechagodzilla.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mech is really good. It's great design.
Thumbs up.
Looks really cool. Like really cool. The fights and stuff are like really well done. I feel with all the showing of its abilities, it feels like. But the fact that it's still, I like the role reversals in this one as well. I liked the making Godzilla a flat-out villain in this, and making Mechagodzilla the underdog, how the human struggles impacted the plot, you know, having that story about the pilot having to step up and, you know, take charge to win the day, and just seeing a different perspective in these fights as well, having a more kind of foot on the ground approach, seeing it from the everyone else's perspective instead of the destruction being separate, was a really nice touch. It's cool to see this kind of modern take on Godzilla, because we're used to kind of the more janky
old school stuff,
school stuff, which has its charms. But it's nice. It's the you can see that they're embracing more modern special effects, and it's a nice era where you can't really rely on CGI too much. So there's still a lot of practical work going on, which is really nice. But yeah, I really liked it. I just felt like it was like a really nice, tight, solid Godzilla flick. Like see it as an effective sort of jumping on point for like a new start for the franchise as well, which is cool.
Nice.
So I'm feeling like seven hamsters out of 10, I think, for this one.
Seven hamsters out of 10. Nice. Yeah. 3.5 out of 5. That's perfect. Yep. Hamsters.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Do you know what? I think this was like 4.5 hamsters out of 5.
Oh, yes.
It was genuinely my favorite of what you've shown me in the entire of what we've done. Like, it was cool. So solid on pacing and tone. And I actually sold myself on, like, rooting for every part of this movie. I really loved all the new introduction of both tone and, like, visual aesthetic as well. And it felt like we did make that jump like the other movies, but it felt like a jump in the right direction. And I really appreciated all the small changes. I don't want to go on because I obviously know that I spoke a lot about it, but, like, even some of, like, the small pieces of things that we haven't spoken about, like how they're starting to integrate. Usually you would bounce back between live action scale and the miniatures and everyone fighting. But that, in terms of cinematography, because of lighting, because of composition and set design, and all those improvements, they're now starting to like merge quite well into each other. And then obviously you have the painting on top of the CG, with whether it's a jet or it's a something else that isn't practical. But yeah, like I think there's always, especially with this era, there's always like this era of film, the early 2000s, there was always this thing of how much CGI do we now use that we have the tools for it? Mm. And I liked that this wasn't like a huge jump in the sense that it's only CG and it's like really showing off that they've got a studio behind them that's really good at doing that, which a lot of like films at the time did. And you had so many actual practical pieces in this. The inside of Mechagodzilla and all of those set pieces were some of my favorite set pieces they've done. And you'd see like this huge CGI crash or whatever, and you'd instantly cut to the more interesting part, which would be the sets that they've built of the rubble and them organically moving around those pieces. Like the camera felt like it moved around the world more. It didn't feel so kind of like stagey, like with walls. Yeah, it just feels more well-rounded in every department, and I loved it. I really had a good time with it. So, it was pretty good, boys.
Awesome.
Pretty good recommendation.
Cool, I'm stoked.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm so glad to hear that you liked it. I feel like you might have rated most of the movies we've seen so far quite low.
I think Adam has been a firm Mechagodzilla believer. I think Alex is the one we need to try to win over.
I knew it was going to get there. Yeah. I knew it was going to get there. Yeah. I think there was always just something that was glaring in all of them that we've watched that really annoyed me. And there was always potential.
What do you think was different about this one?
Well, there's just so many things. That's, I think, what's so overwhelming about it. I could literally sit here for ages and just pick, like, go through all, like, the different departments, like, the improvements on sound, cinematography, set design, acting, script, the lighting, you know, all these areas, the costume design as well, like, you know, they're still using live actors in suits, but like they kind of move more organically and they reflect the light more organically, and it feels more real the way that the miniatures are integrated, and the detail of the miniatures as well. So you're not sure if you're seeing an aerial or you're up close to a miniature that's been painted really well.
Yeah.
Really small things like that, and how they all weave together. It was so impressive. And usually it is that glaring thing with this where you watch it and you're like, oh, we've switched from everyone looking up like, oh, and you don't get any scale.
Yeah.
Like we spoke a lot of times as well, like we've never had this many extras in any of these films.
Yeah.
People running, and which is like something that I, before watching any of these, felt was quite quite synonymous with like Godzilla, like, you know, the like people running away and escaping and then
yeah.
Godzilla walking. But you didn't get any of that with the others. Whereas this one, you've actually got like shots of people running out of buildings, loads of extras, camera work that's still a bit like not quite there, you know. Mm. And also I can tell that they obviously had a lot of fun artistically with this. Like I think they recognized it was a huge improvement, because you've got that confidence with some shots as well, like doing pieces of cinematography and composition that are really different, or like setting specific shots that are going to be like the shots. You know, I think often when you don't have that trust, you tend to like not focus on those like luxurious aspects of filmmaking so much. Yeah. When you're confident in the changes you're making and the film you're making, you think a bit more broadly about, oh, I actually want to lead this scene up to a really beautiful shot, and all these other little small details that they've clearly put in here that make it really good. But yeah, just so different in all those areas. And therefore, yeah, just so really enjoyable. And it didn't waste any time. Like, we got to the end of it and I was like, wow. Like,
super quick.
That passed really quick. It was like a pleasure to like sit through.
I think that was my favorite thing about it, is it's just so quick. It sets up the characters. Like, instantly you see Godzilla, you get some of the backstory driving force for the main character, Akane.
Mm.
We get a Godzilla or a Mechagodzilla fight like within the first half of the movie, and then a really great finale. I loved it. And exactly what you were talking about, there was some cool miniature stuff throughout. Like, there's a scene of Kiryu just walking through a building, and we cut into like the inside of the building, and we just see his face just pushing through all of these offices, and then he comes out the other side, leaves a Mechagodzilla shaped hole. Some of that stuff I thought just looked super cool. I just think it was perfectly paced. The human side of things was really cool. I liked Akane. She's such a great character. Actually, like, a backstory that I could get behind, a character I could feel what she was going through, and I love the place she came to at the end. My only like negative was that it's still kind of similar to some of the stuff we've seen in the Millennium Era already. We watched a movie called Godzilla vs. Megaguirus, which is Godzilla vs. a giant dragonfly.
That was directed by the same director as this as
same,
well.
Same director, and it's kind of about the special Godzilla force, and there's a main lady, kind of like Akane, and she lost her whole team against Godzilla. She's like trying to deal with their loss, and if she's actually good, and if she stuffed up, and she wants revenge against Godzilla. And I feel like it was kind of similar beats for a similar main character this time around. But I really liked it. I'm with you, Adam. I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 5 hamsters. I think this is my favorite Mechagodzilla movie yet.
Hell yeah.
All the hamsters. Love it. Yeah, definitely my favorite iteration of Mechagodzilla. Yeah, this movie had a lot of ups for me. I think the best choreography we've seen, I want to say, for kaiju fighting period. I really love all the action shots in here. And whenever you have Godzilla and Kiryu on screen together, you just know something awesome is going to happen. Like, the final fight here is just awesome to me. Starting off with that shot from the moon and the shoulder check, and then it just going crazy from there. It really feels like what we've been wanting Mechagodzilla to be ever since his appearance.
Yeah.
I don't think the human side of the story hit as much for me this time as it has for other movies. You have the doctor and his daughter Sarah, who, I don't know, they just didn't really do it for me. I think Akane was the redeeming factor, but Even then, for some reason, it might have just been the fact that it did feel similar to Mechagirus. It might have also even been the fact that, you know, we've seen the new Godzilla minus one recently, which just does so freaking well with its human story and human characters. I also, this isn't anything against this movie, but I was under the impression that she was going to be a mainstay as the protagonist for the next movie as well. So when I learned that she wasn't, I was kind of like, ah. I do still appreciate what they did with her. And yeah, I think this movie's really good in a lot of places. And even if the human side of the story didn't do it for me, the kaiju and monster fights still outweigh it in that area. I'm going to give it four hamsters.
Four hamsters?
Four hamsters.
Yeah. It's been so interesting just seeing the different iterations with you guys, because it feels like, I mean, being able to just catch up with you two specifically and talk about each of these Mechagodzilla entries have made them kind of like big event films for us. So it's cool to finally be like in this stuff, which I really love and have a real like nostalgia for growing up with. Yeah, it's been a cool little journey.
Mate, it's such a pleasure, because like it means so much to you guys. It's like if I were to sit you through all of like the first seasons of Doctor Who and just like see your reactions of it. Obviously, it's different because you guys have seen it.
We would do it though. We would be there.
Oh, hell yeah. No, it's just, it is a pleasure that you invite us on for these like huge parts of the lore as well, because it really does like sign us up for all of the really important parts of Godzilla and the things that I think mean the most to you guys. So yeah, it's always really fun to come on for these like special big pieces. Just makes you want to delve into like the smaller ones as well.
I know. Yeah, well, there you go. And next episode, everyone, we are going to be talking about Godzilla Tokyo SOS, the part two to this Kiryu saga. And the synopsis for Godzilla Tokyo SOS is Mothra and her fairies return to Japan to warn mankind that they must return Kiryu to the sea, for the dead must not be disturbed. However, Godzilla has survived to menace Japan, leaving Kiryu as the nation's only defense. So we'll be back in the new year with Adam and Alex to cover Godzilla Tokyo SOS. It's going to be amazing. You guys are finally seeing Mothra, which is going to be huge.
Oh, it was huge.
Massive.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. It's going to be good.
Is it going to be in the new year?
Oh, no, it's not. After Christmas.
After Christmas.
Not in the new year. After Christmas, which is going to be just as special. But yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. And we will get to some of your guys' reviews of Godzilla against Mechagodzilla and Godzilla Tokyo SOS at the end of that episode. So stay tuned for next week. I forget we don't release every 2 weeks now. We release weekly.
That's a big change.
Yeah, it's huge. But yeah, this is really cool. And I just can't wait to talk about Tokyo SOS. I can't wait to jump on Fortnite. When are we doing it, guys?
Oh my God, yeah.
Soon as we're done.
That's our New Year's sorted, isn't it?
Soon as we're done here. Let's do it.
Also, thanks again for you two for coming on. You're going to be here next episode as well, which is a blast. But do you have any final thoughts before we head off?
I mean, where can people listen to you guys as well? We talk about Final Draft heaps because we love you guys. But you got any plans? Or
Alex, do the plug.
Alex.
Avid listeners of the Final Draft will know that we have been not as active in recent years, so you know, it's a work in progress as always. You can just check us out wherever you're listening to this. We got a backlog, we got some episodes with you boys. Check those out, and anything that catches your eye really, and we should have some exciting stuff in the new year. We spoke a lot about Doctor Who recently, so who knows, maybe that'll be something we talk about in the future. Watch this space, and I'm sure you'll find out when we do upload something, because these guys are very supportive and they're the best. And if you're not in their Discord and stuff, you should join in there to keep up to date with everything that's going on in the community, guys. It's really important. It's nice to see everyone in there. It's a great little community.
That's real cool. And I'm sure, Adam, we need to get you streaming again too, dude. Surely some Fortnite streams at least.
Yeah, but I'm not that good. This is the thing, like, I'm actually quite bad.
Fortnite?
Yeah. Now I sound like it's something that I'd love to do, I definitely wouldn't advertise it because I haven't found a good way of doing it. I'm actually having like, the first time ever, I feel like a bit of a technophobe with it. I've never in my life felt like a technophobe, but this streaming stuff is hard, man. Especially with, I don't know if any of you people out there know anything about sound. But like, I'm having issues with sound on my streams and stuff like that. Like, I just can't figure out.
No, can't tell you anything about sound. As podcasters, I have no clue.
Neither.
No idea.
I think just check that your sound system hasn't been like taken over by the ghosts of a giant creature that was killed in Hiroshima, or you know,
that would not be ideal.
Yeah,
that's a return to return to sender for that one.
Yeah, make sure no lights are glowing red when you try to stream, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, support the final draft, everyone. Join our Discord, links in the show notes, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Podzilla. Join our Discord server, tag us on Letterboxd, and follow us on socials at PodzillaPod. Links are all in our show notes. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/podzilla and get access to extended cuts of every episode and the occasional bonus ep. Huge thank you to Cassie Celine for our seasonal podcast art. And just a disclaimer that all music and additional audio used in this episode belong entirely to the Toho Company.
Did it have a name?
The plant?
The plant.
I don't think it did.
I'm surprised it doesn't show up on the wikis as a monster. The trauma dump plant.